Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to Hardcore Listing with Chris and the handsome and intelligent devil that is Stuart Whiffin. I'm Chris. Stu just paid me to say that. We are here for part two of our chat with the dope rambling lads, Chris and Reese, doing their top five movies of all time. I'm not going to delay. You've had me waffling on for the intro of part one. Let's get straight into part two with the lads. Enjoy.
It's a drunken soiree in the Whiffin.
Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listing, the podcast.
Okay, well, look, Chris, you can start the next one for your three.
Number three, and this is one we're doing actually for the Jim Carrey season. Mm-hmm. So, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Oh, that's a great
film. I've told you it's got a massive theme on my top five. Mm-hmm. Again, watched it after a breakup, and you think to yourself, if Laguna Seca was real, would you do it? Mm. Would you do it?
Yeah.
You would?
She's lovely.
Yeah. Laguna Seca. Was you?
Yeah. Never seen it. So I've just...
Have you never seen it? You've never seen it?
No, no. Like, when I saw this, when you saw your list come through, I'm like, for fuck's sake, because so many people have said, because you'd really like Eternal Sunshine.
I watched it when it came out of cinema.
Yeah.
I've not watched it since.
And it's great film.
And it blew me away when I saw
it.
We're recording
it. This might have been one of his first films after Man on the Moon.
No.
No, I don't think so.
This is 2004.
This is just after number 23.
Yeah. No, number 23 was a bit later.
Is it?
A bit later.
No. I think number 23 is 2007, 2006, maybe.
I just remember that this is the first time it's like, oh, Jim Carrey, not a comedic role.
Yeah. Man on the Moon, again, almost made my thing.
Man on the Moon, great film.
Fucking incredible.
Yeah.
His greatest performance as far as
I reckon?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about that. Mm. Eternal Sunshine for me.
Courtney Love's second greatest performance.
I'm not a Courtney Love fan.
Oh, mate, you need to watch People versus Larry Flint, man.
She's blowing
your fucking mind. Yeah.
Is that because she gets her boobs out, those two?
No.
Only slightly.
No, sometimes he goes, his ratings
all the
go
nudie
up
flicks
for a bit of a bit of
no,
flesh.
No one wants to see Courtney Love's boobs, mate.
Not anymore.
Everyone's already seen them, mate.
Yeah. That's an incredible film.
No one wants to see him again. So it is a really good film.
I'll recap Eternal Sunshine because I can't believe you've never seen
honestly,
it.
Honestly, like, it's one of those ones where I know
it's one of those ones that's been told and told and told.
Well, I'm also kind of
scared to watch.
It's
because I kind of understand it's a little bit melancholic.
So it's basically this company Laguna Seca can go into your mind while you're sleeping, or they put you under a sedative, and basically they go into your brain and erase memories and thoughts and feelings of a loved one you've recently split with or anyone you don't want any part of your life.
I'll just say quickly, surprise Elijah Wood in the movie as well.
Yeah, Elijah Wood's in it, Mark Ruffalo's in it, Kirsten Dunst is in it.
It's a great cast.
Ruffalo's fucking cool.
Kate Winslet's in it. Yeah. Like, and so this guy basically breaks up with his girlfriend. But there's a massive twist. Obviously, I won't spoil it, but there's a massive twist all the way, obviously, through it.
I think the concept of it's lovely. I really do.
I love that they used visual effects rather than special effects as well. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
I think 70 to 80% of the film was practical effects.
Great.
So all the scene when he's running through the streets and it's all falling apart, they didn't use special effects for any of that.
Winslet's amazing, in that film.
Winslet's incredible. Yeah. I mean, she's great anyway. She was in a Woody Allen film the other week I watched, actually, with Justin Timberlake in it, which is fucking incredible. Oh. But yeah, really good. It's him by Charlie Kaufman.
Woody Allen's still making films?
Of course he is, one every year.
Really?
Has done since 19... 60-something.
People still watch his films?
Yeah, I do.
Chris loves it.
He's my favourite director of all time.
Have you seen the...
She Was 21. That's literally my slogan of his new film. Yeah, that's my slogan anytime anyone mentions Woody Allen. She Was 21.
Have you seen the testimony from... who was it? I read it.
Is it from one of the Pharaohs?
Mate, I can't... Oh, this is going to be huge guesswork now. Basically, someone gave a testimony in support of Woody Allen.
Okay.
Saying how crazy the fucking... that household was.
Oh, yeah, the Pharaoh household was mental.
Yeah, yeah. Like how Woody was actually a beacon of light in
that
household.
Yeah, so basically...
She's held back. They've held back for years, and it's been brutal to watch... Even their own sisters and brothers get twisted
so
against Woody.
So what happened was, right, obviously... we
in a nutshell, in 1 minute...
Right, in 1 minute, Woody Allen married Mia Farrow.
Yeah.
Mia Farrow and, I can't remember his name now, I think it's Jason Previn or Justin Previn. Basically, they adopted a daughter, Soo Yin, from Korea. Soo Yin Previn moved to America. Woody Allen then got with Mia Farrow. When Soo Yin Previn was 21, there was pictures that were found of her explicitly in his underwear drawer. They were having a relationship. She was 21. Let's put that out there. But he'd been in her life since she was 14.
Yeah.
So there was obviously allegations of it's been happening for years.
Well, this is what I mentioned before, is that the only reason why it's okay is because they're still together.
Yeah.
If they would have split
yeah, they're still
up,
together now.
If they split up, it would have been a major deal, but they're still together now.
But then after that, Mia Farrow's son and daughter, Penn, and I can't remember the daughter's name, came out and said, oh, he's been diddling me as well. But that was never proven. There was no images, all that kind of normal stuff, because back then there was no internet, there was no emails or whatever. But then I think 15 or 20 years later, they did a second trial, and they said the exact same thing in the exact same cadence, almost like a script, to what they thought Woody had done to him. So I think he was innocent. Thrown out there now.
Yeah.
Hate me or not.
I saw a testimony his testimony was like about half hour to read from one of the other people in the household. Why it's not credible. And it's only quite plausible, but I mean, obviously, that's the only time I've spent on it. So I'm not going to give a ruling now.
I love Woody Allen. I went to watch him play jazz in Hamburg once. I was in Berlin, Belgium. I travelled over and watched him. And there was loads of fucking protests outside.
Really?
Unbelievable. Like, even like in the concert as well, there was people fucking protesting it.
They buy a ticket to protest?
Yeah. You had protests going on inside the concert. It was insane, honestly. I think it must have stopped like 5 times for people protesting and kicking them out and stuff.
Wow.
It's fucking stupid. Yeah.
Sure.
Eternal Sunshine.
Eternal Sunshine.
Kate Winslet's amazing in it as I can't remember her name now. Clementine.
Clementine.
So yeah, it's by Charlie Kaufman, who did Being John Malkovich, and adaptation,
which is fucking batshit crazy.
Yeah.
Did anyone watch Malkovich as Poirot at Christmas?
No.
That was strange.
The last I saw of Malkovich, he was in a film called Supercon. Which
that
is
doesn't sound super
really bad.
Sounds like
it's about a Comic Con where they basically getting shortchanged and they try and rob him. Has anyone seen Lost? It's got Maggie Grace from Lost in it. She's in it. And,
Kate, isn't it?
No, she plays Shannon. But it's got she's in it. It's fucking garbage. It's really bad.
I haven't seen Malkovich in anything, and my missus loves a bit of Agatha
Christie. He was in Bird's Nest.
Oh, right.
He was in Bird's Nest, actually.
Pops up.
Yeah. I think that's the last film he's done. But as Poirot, I couldn't imagine him.
It's quite strange.
Yeah.
It's quite strange.
He's very American.
Mm.
Like, Southern American as well, I think.
Rhys Battley's 3.
Number 3, Scanner Darkly. Seen it?
Nice, yeah.
That's animated, right?
Yeah. Well, it's rotoscaped, as it says. So basically, every frame is drawn. And then they just add on top of it. So it is animated, it is live action, but also drawn at the same time.
Who's that made by?
I have to look it up now.
He didn't do his research.
I didn't do all of it.
I'm here ready.
It's someone real famous, though.
I've never seen Scanner Darkly.
Great film.
It's one of those films where...
Richard Linklater.
Of course he's seen it.
And he done...
Fuck's sake, he's done a fucking ton of shizzle. So, he has done Boyhood.
Yes.
As well. Waking Life. Fucking Waking Life.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I never realised he'd done Waking Life.
What else has he done, Chris?
Oh, hold on.
He did a fucking massive film.
Let me get a big old...
Yeah.
Let me get a big old... Oh, hasn't he done one of your favourites? The rock and roll one, Almost Famous. Didn't he do Almost Famous?
No, that's the true story of Cameron Crowe, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's Cameron Crowe. I think it's one of your favourite films, Chris.
Let me have a little look here.
Anyway, explain why you love it.
Dazed
and Confused, yeah, of course.
It's, yeah. Funny enough, they filmed Dazed Confused. There's going to be a Dazed Confused 2. I don't know if it's come out yet or not.
I don't know if I want to say
but,
that.
It was filmed on my university campus because obviously it's based in Texas, so they filmed it all on my own.
Oh, shit.
But I loved it because it's one of those movies. I talked to Chris about it, and it's one of those movies that people are like, I've always wanted to see it, but they've never seen it. Mm. So I broke down one day, and I found it online, watched it, and I was just blown away. Because obviously Keanu, after The Matrix, so he's always a huge star. And then the whole thing, I actually had to buy the book and read the book because, unfortunately, the movie doesn't really give the book justice in the end. But the whole style and artwork and surprise Robert Downey Jr. in it, if you haven't seen it. He's great in it.
Yeah, he is good. And yeah,
he's just so, completely paranoid.
Is Woody Harrelson in it as well? Oh my God, immense.
Woody Harrelson, yeah, isn't he? Yeah. So, like, two people that can play really good druggies.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, like, that's pretty much all Woody Harrelson's role for the last, like, 20 years or whatever.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, and then...
And at that point, Danny Jr. wouldn't have had to try that hard, right?
No, yeah, exactly. He was just already there.
Because had he done Kiss Kiss Bang Bang by that point, or was it just... Did
this
he do
was
that
2006.
After? Let me have a look. Because that was at the point where we started coming back on
some
the
what?
Scene.
Some wine.
Yes, sorry.
I'm all finished. Like,
all out of
let
things.
Me have a little look and see.
But like I said, I think all in all... Ooh, look at this.
It's a raffle wine.
Raffle wine. I will say that as far as a movie as I literally watched it about a year and a half ago for the first time ever, and I rewatched it 3 times since then.
Mm-hmm.
It is a massive mess with your head, and I kind of like. Have you watched that new one, Altered Carbon?
Yep.
That came out just recently.
Yeah.
I liked how it kind of had a similar sort of. Not premise, but the idea that, like, in the thing, it's basically drugs are the biggest problem of the era.
Yeah.
So they have cops and informants, and they don't want to know who's who, so you're wearing a mask.
Yeah. And I was going to say, it's my favorite mechanic.
Yeah, and it totally messes up. It could be anybody, any person, any time. And then, because he's taking this drug that, like, basically makes you go crazy, like, he doesn't know who he is.
Yeah.
He can't disassociate what he is, like his undercover personality and his actual life anymore.
Yeah.
And becomes in one. And at the end, it does have a happy ending, almost. Like, you don't really get that if you watch the movie, you don't really know what's going on. But if you read the book, turns out that the company that's making all this stuff is, like, the biggest company in the world, and they're secretly supplying the world with these drugs, and he's the one who brings it down. Although he doesn't know he brings it down because he's so, like, out of his head at the end of it. It's a good movie. Haven't watched it, it's totally worth it.
It is a head fuck. There's really good acting performance in it. Like you say, Downey Jr. is really good at injection of energy in it. And like you say, that mechanic of when he's wearing that mask, when he's going to see the agents and it's confusing his personality and all. There's all different images come across it. It is good. It's difficult to follow.
It's a hard watch. I wouldn't recommend smoking weed and watching it.
See, I really like just a simple film.
Yeah.
An A to B, this is what happens. You go here, this is it.
Like I said, the only reason I got it because I bought the book and I had to read it.
Yeah.
That's the only reason I actually figured out. Because I thought the ending was, if you watch the movie, the ending's kind of lackluster. But if you read the book and you know what actually happens.
It's the same with Jurassic Park, though.
Yeah.
Jurassic Park books are much better than the films.
Really good, the book.
It's fucking and the
I
only
think
reason
I watched the first I read the first two. I read.
Do you know why the only reason they made he wrote the second book was because the first film was so successful.
I've actually
that's the only reason.
Have you read The Beach?
No.
Read The Beach.
Is it good? All right, we'll have to do that for this.
Yeah.
Beach was a huge bestseller for years before that film.
Oh, wow. Yeah, because it's all about the.
Wasn't it the same guy who wrote Trainspotting? Or am I? Is that
making mental?
But yeah, we were talking about the book, because like the book goes really into depth about how he loves video games.
Yeah, the movie really doesn't.
And all that, but the movie skips over everything.
I just want to say, throw it out there. There's one scene. I've totally been to where Jurassic Park was filmed.
You like, said?
I've seen the poles. The poles are still there. Yeah. You can drive through it, but there's nothing else.
But there's one scene in the beach which referenced like his love of video games, and then that's it. I was really fucking annoyed. You
know, it's like he's
running through the forest, isn't he? Off his fucking, on his jolly. But yeah, we've heard about the book. The book sounds really good. Sounds really amazing.
So,
so who wins this one? Who's
Battle of Number Three?
Alex Garland wrote The Beach. He also wrote Ex Machina, which is amazing.
And he hated that.
And Annihilation. No, and 28 Days Later. No. And Sunshine. So fucking hell.
Reese hates Ex Machina.
Dread? He wrote Dread?
Unfortunately. Yeah.
Oh, it's quite
I just can't get into it in the end.
Yeah.
That's okay. You're allowed to not like
everything. You're allowed
everything.
To be
wrong. Yeah, that's Simon says.
For track film three, Chris, you get my vote. Eternal Sunshine.
Although I've not seen Eternal, I've only seen Scanner, so I can't really judge it, can I?
It's a draw.
Can't judge it. Right. It's just on your vote. It's just your vote.
Oh, all right. Reese, you're fucked, man. Reese, so step up, man. 2-1 You can put forward your case for number two before Chris, then.
All right. Number two. Fear and Loathing Las Vegas.
Yeah, solid.
I'm gonna lose this one here.
It's such a great movie. It really, like, I think my list for me, anyways, is just trying to capture what I really loved, like growing up, and what it's kind of like. Not shaped me, but this movie definitely has. Like, it came. I watched it at a time where I'd had done LSD, and I was so amazed about how, you know, they really nail on the head. And recently just started reading Hunter S. Thompson's Hell's Angels.
Right, yeah.
And I'm just going through that book, and like his writing style and just how he puts himself to the story and like the movie and just everything. It just really, like, the 60s is something I wish I could live through.
Yeah.
Because it seems such a wild time.
We've spoken about this, haven't 100%. We?
Yeah.
So we've spoken about, like, because we were both born in 92. Sorry to make you guys feel a bit old.
Oh my God.
We were 92, and we were talking about, like,
literally smashing girls left, right,
not anymore.
I mean, that's a lie.
I was 12.
Plowing through them.
I was DJing.
Yeah.
Like, Nirvana.
You were in your 30s, weren't you?
Oh, I was playing Nirvana records.
So we were talking, like, what generation we think we would, one, most be suited to, and two, love to live through. So I think mine was, like, I think I said the 80s. I think that would be my... I think that where my mindset is, I think that would absolutely be ideal.
I think, well, like, both my parents lived through that generation, and my dad, born in 1952, he actually didn't go to Woodstock because he decided to go to another festival, although he's living on the East Coast at the time. And so he drove around Woodstock, and he was, like, even devastated. Just, like, outside of the general vicinity of it, it was, you know, mad. My dad's the type of guy who's, like, he lived in a commune for a while. And so just, like, their life, when they tell me stories, it's like, and I get, you have kids, like, you tell half-truths, like, you tell them basic stuff what happened, but you don't give them all the details. And I know for a fact my parents have done a fuck ton of drugs. But they're not saying, like, oh, by the way, they were doing acid last weekend, you know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I know for a fact because, like, watching these movies and then hearing stories and, like, so wait, you were out in the woods... just drinking beer for three days straight.
Yeah.
Like, no soda fucking way.
Drinking just soda water.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, we're just drinking water.
Just
from
drinking
the stream.
Tonic.
Like, no way you.
There was a lesser spotted. You were bird watching.
Yeah, but I think that's just the thing. It's like the whole '60s thing, and then this, like, I've always wanted to do a Fear and Loathing, like, style trip. It's just like you just pack in a bag. Don't even bring any extra clothes and just see where the Vegas strips, like, lands.
Man, like, so Fear and Loathing came out when I'd been doing LSD for quite a bit, but it was still a phase where I was doing that, and I was at uni and I was really getting fucked up a lot. And so that was literally, that and Human Traffic were literally anthems for us for different drugs. And to think that it doesn't encourage you to want to go to Las Vegas with a suitcase.
Well, like I said, at the time, like, so this movie came out in 97. I was probably watching it in 2011.
Yeah.
For the first time. Because I never heard it before. I didn't even know what Hunter Thompson was, obviously, before I started, like, doing hallucinogens. But, like, afterwards, and then, like kind of delving into it, just, like, just speaking so much truths, you know, in the world. And, like I said, I feel a real connection with my parents, although they would never admit it. And if they're listening to this podcast, like, I've done LSD.
Just let me know what you've done, mother. But
I know you have as well. So totally fair. So, yeah. You know, only because one of their friends let it out. Like, we used to play ping pong all the time. And he was like, oh, this reminds me of the time we were all tripping acid playing ping pong. I was like, it's a weird thing to fucking mention at Thanksgiving.
It's great. Have you read the book, Freeman Loving?
No, I haven't read that one.
It's lit. Honestly, it's word for word.
Yeah.
And, like, sometimes people get annoyed by that. I wasn't. And, like, I didn't read the book. I read the book
I'm reading Hell's Angels right now and highly recommend a read. I don't think it's in the same level as Fear and Loathing, but it really gives you a glimpse of what these guys were doing. No, and just, like, living in that lifestyle.
They were definitely doing it as well, man. Like,
I know.
Johnny Depp was saying, like,
Black, isn't he? He was, like, talking about, like, all the drugs they used to do, and it was like, in the 70s, everyone was just doing it.
Yeah.
It's just what people were doing. Life. Yeah.
Yeah.
No one even thought just two things about it. So, yeah, that's mine. Number two.
It's great. Benicio del Toro, by the way, is fucking amazing in that.
What a guy.
Christina Ricci. Oh, actually. Toby Maguire. It's a banger.
The thing about the main guy, Johnny Depp, as I've heard, I read a rumor that apparently he doesn't learn his own lines. He has enough money that he pays people to read him lines through a microphone in his ear. That's what I read. He pays over $100K a year for a team of people read him his lines, so that way it seems more like on the spot, natural. That's one of the weird Johnny Depp facts I have now.
He's also a massive piece of shit.
Yeah, totally.
Well, yeah, from those videos you see from Amber.
Amber Heard, yeah.
I'm sorry, like, I know that sometimes you can set things up to make things look worse than what they are.
But
when I watched that, I was kind of like,
do you know what?
You're acting like an a-hole.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, yeah, and weirdly, like, this is linked into Hunter S. Thompson. Like, Hunter is
crazy.
Yeah. And Johnny idolises him.
Oh.
And when you see these videos, you're like,
you're just trying to be.
You're a little bit, yeah. I think he's ended up art imitating life. Imitating art. He's just smashing up a kitchen, basically.
He's calling her all sorts under the, like, yeah. It's just not apparently it was quite a volatile relationship as well between him and Amber Heard. And obviously he leaked all the videos and pictures that when they were together because they broke up and he got a bit fucking pissed up, probably. Because doesn't he spend like fucking 30 grand a month on wine?
Yeah, I've heard that as well. It's something silly like
apparently
that.
Apparently, he just gets wine shipped out to him every day. Just on the wine. These videos just him being a bit loud and a bit leery and a bit pissed up. And
have you ever seen the video of Hunter S. Thompson and Conan O'Brien hanging out for a day?
Yeah.
No. Oh,
yeah.
It is beautiful and amazing, and it's kind of terrifying because although I would like, he's obviously Hunter S. Thompson's dead. I would love to meet him in real life, but not really, because he's on another level. Wrong. Well, they're fucking shooting guns on his property in Colorado, and he just fired an automatic rifle, and he's obviously high on something, and then he goes, and he thinks something's running by his feet. And then Cohen goes, that guy literally had an automatic rifle in his hand not 2 seconds ago.
That's mental. It's
fucking crazy. This is a guy who, like, would just shoot fucking things in his kitchen just for a laugh.
Yeah, definitely. Like, Depp met him in a club, and he came into a club with a cattle prod to keep people away from him.
Of course you do.
I mean, like, why not? That was the '60s, man. That's what you just did.
Yeah, different time, man. But yeah, it is the shit, man. And I've forgotten how much of a film that was for me back in my early 20s.
Well, I think it's the same as me. Like, in my early 20s as well. Like, it was really just a like fundamental part. I watched Bible. It probably about, I don't know, 100 times between 20 and 23.
Yeah,
so I mean, seriously. Is there any point in me saying my number two now?
I would love to hear it.
So I've got Rushmore.
Great film.
Oh, fuck it.
Still never seen it.
Still not seen it.
Have you not? You two are out of the loop. So it's probably Wes Anderson's greatest film.
So that's the thing. It's like, of course I love
Wes Anderson is my, as we mentioned about Woody, Wes Anderson's probably my second favourite director. I think I've seen every film of his fucking multiple times. So it's about, Max Fisher.
Hey, Stu, can I have another double, please?
Who is basically, he's a bright academic, is at the best school in America. You know, he's top of his, well, he's not top of his grades, he's bottom of his grades most of the time. But he's sort of the after-school king So he runs all of the lessons, all of the post classes. I mean, he saved Latin. it's Jason Schwartzman's first ever film role as well.
Really?
Which I think
is
you've got
his first, okay.
first ever film role.
Okay, it's kind of cool.
Which you've got to take into consideration. It was filmed. Bill Murray's in it. Yeah, first ever. Classic. He was. I think he was 17 when he got the role, and there was 4,000 Max Fishers auditioned across Britain, Canada, and America. So he goes to this school. He's, you know, intelligent bloke, and then he sort of falls in love with a teacher who at the school, and basically decides, I want to do everything to get this woman in my life. Basically,
right.
I will do everything in my power to be with her. And then he meets one of the fathers of two of the kids in his class, played by Bill Murray, who is a very successful businessman. And basically he starts funding all of his extravagant after-school projects. So like building a fish tank with a shark in it. and then the Bill Murray's character then meets the teacher, and then they love develop a relationship. Yeah. Again, every film has to have a love relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And then Max Fisher gets jealous, puts on a big sort of song and dance, and tries to basically coax her away from Bill Murray's character. It is, yeah. Like, Bill Murray apparently hated Jason Schwartzman. The first day of shooting,
really?
He said, I fucking hate this guy. Why have you cast him? But, I mean, they're still best mates to this day.
They're still friends.
He
didn't become like a pop star, right?
Who?
Schwartzman.
No.
He's still massive films.
Yeah, he does films all the time. He's mainly Wes Anderson.
He did a little bit of music,
he does a lot.
But he's
basically just all Wes films.
But, I mean, Inside the Mind of Charles Swan III.
Never saw one.
There we are.
Yeah, I guess.
That's a fucking hipster reference right there.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've never seen that one.
That was just after Charlie Sheen was on his massive, like, Tiger Blood. Yeah.
Oh, no.
So then he did, winning.
Yeah, he did Inside the Mind of Charles Swan III. It's fucking mental.
Don't
do any drugs while taking that. I'll tell you that now.
Okay.
I'll throw it out. I think it's interesting that both their number twos come within a year of each other. 98,
97. No, it's 96.
So 97, 96.
Yeah, still, this is 96.
That's kind of crazy that both their number twos are.
But yeah, like.
Each other.
Well, I mean, Stu, what do you remember from Rush?
Baby.
Okay.
Bit of Rihanna in the background.
Yeah.
Who's getting bored? Just going to play my playlist.
I'm not, because...
Are you trying to think of the song that came out? Wasn't it... What was the song that came out that was quite
California,
big?
California.
California.
Here we are. That's the OC, isn't it?
Phantom Planet. Yeah. Jason Schwartzman.
Is it? Fucking hell.
Yeah.
A little fun fact about Rushmore.
He's an air musician.
And about Wes Anderson, like Bill Murray in general, because he's a fucking legend.
Obviously.
Let me tell you something about Bill Murray, right?
Let's hear the story.
My mate that lives in America,
right,
is he moved out of there, and when I spoke about him before, he's one of them guys that whatever he does, he's super, super, lands on his feet. Goes for a run in LA, then plays football with some guys on a beach. Turns out it's Jason Statham,
Jesus Christ.
Robbie Williams, and Gordon Ramsay. And then ends up being one of 20 people at Robbie Williams' wedding. And just,
fuck it. Just life.
Always. Apart from Winston, in his time living in America, he's met all the Ghostbusters.
Nice.
Right?
What?
No.
Wasn't that the guy in that film we were watching?
Yeah.
Remember we were watching? We're like, that's fucking him from Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Right.
Donnie Glover.
Even before.
Yeah.
Sam died.
Or
Harold.
Ramis. Nice. So let me just show you the picture the other day, where he's just having some lunch
with Bill.
In America.
As you do.
As he does in America, because that's where he lives.
In LA, I'm guessing.
He's.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
But yeah, I'll try to say the Murray fact.
Go for it.
So there was a scene in the Rushmore where basically there was a massive helicopter supposed to be sort of up in the air, landing and doing all this weird shit.
It fucking had Five Guys. Right, it's amazing. Mate. Just throw it out there. Amazing. You used to work Five Guys. You can fuck yourself. like,
and basically Wes Anderson found out it would be too much for his budget because he's only just starting out then and he only had a couple of films. So Bill Murray basically just wrote a blank check and was like, whatever it costs, this film needs this scene. So if it costs $300,000, I will pay you $300,000. Like, this film needs this scene, do it, and charge me. And just give him a check, and there you are. Which is why in the film, all the helicopter scenes and stuff, like, all paid for by Bill Murray.
Well,
like, he's an absolute legend.
Bill, we watched that whole thing about Bill Murrayism.
There's a really weird like fan made documentary which I downloaded last year, and it's called like The Legend of Bill Murray. So it's like all these fan.
I don't like the fan created things, but the stories.
Well, they're fan stories. About all the times they've met Bill Murray and where they've met him, and you know the interact like the time he went to Coachella and went behind the bar and started just pouring him tequila shots and didn't charge anyone and was like just paid for the whole bill at the end of the night. The time he went into a public urinal and started just going behind people and covering their eyes and going, they'll never believe it. And then walking away. Like, these are genuine Bill Murray stories that in 30, 40, 50 years, when we tell our kids, like, this actor was incredible. He did Garfield, but he was incredible.
Except for Garfield.
And all these weird stories. He didn't, like, give a shit about his, like, life. He just wanted to live. Doesn't have an agent.
No. Still just uses his condom. Famously will handshake on a contract, won't he?
Yeah.
That's why Ghostbusters 3 was an absolute nightmare.
But, like, anything, any job offers he gets, he goes over voicemail. What's the other Bill Murray? There's loads of weird little Bill Murray stories, which are, like...
And he's in Stripes, which is fucking incredible.
Like, he's been in some of the greatest films ever made.
Him and Ramesh.
We almost did...
Harris Thompson movie as well. Where the Buffalo Roams.
But we almost did Groundhog Day for Christmas, because it's always a Christmas film.
That was like, the choices. Like,
yeah, and it's fucking... Like, he's just so good.
Scrooge. I think, hopefully, Bill Murray will be a part of our...
Oh, man, so our season two was either going to be Bill Murray or Jim Carrey. Depending on how people voted, and people voted for Jim Carrey.
Fair enough.
I think it was like 72% Jim Carrey, 28% Bill Murray. So it was close.
It was real close. I mean, close.
So we almost did that, and it was Bill Murray will
come back. We'll do Bill Murray.
Oh, for sure, because he's been in so many. This was basically Rushmore was his second wind in films.
Yeah.
So he'd done things which were out of this world. And then he went on a bit of a lull. He went on a bit of a lull, and then he did Rushmore, which really put him back into the focus of Bill Murray's actor.
He's just too good in general.
But anyway, Reese, you've won number two.
Well,
I haven't. You haven't given chosen
because
yet.
The thing is, the problem is, I've not seen Rushmore.
I'm going Rushmore.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, so you've had to pick Rushmore over. Okay, well, there you go. I want to pick.
So are we 1-1 going into
this? I already realized it's going in losing this whole fucking battle.
Rushmore would have to be seriously. I've never good seen for it to be Fear and Loathing for me.
I reckon Rushmore's probably better.
Should we go IMDb score?
Yeah. What's yours?
89.
87.
There we are.
Oh, I think we go on that.
Yeah. All right.
I think that's fair.
3-1
But that was a close one. It was nearly 2-2 So
well, I can tell you, this one's going to be the fucking end.
This is your one. This is your one for sure. Because my one is.
Go for it, man.
Number one for me is the second Ace Ventura film of
When Nature Calls.
Yes.
Not even the original.
Not the original, because I think it's like my reasons are. Well, apparently Jim Carrey didn't want to make this movie, which is fair.
Does he want to make any movie?
But I think, like, yeah, Chicago. Yeah. Like, so Chicago. Many great scenes, like, just slapstick. The very beginning is a cliffhanger scene. Have you seen Cliffhanger?
With Sylvester Stallone? Raccoon,
yeah, he was a fucking raccoon about to die. It's a parody of Cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Beautiful scene.
Yeah.
It's amazing, just start to a movie.
Yeah.
And like I said, I didn't realize that until I watched Cliffhanger, and I realized it's scene by scene. I've seen this somewhere. Yeah, but Rhino scene—he gets birthed by Rhino, which is parodied by Always Sunny when Frank comes out of the couch.
Yeah,
100%. I think all in all, a lot of times movies don't really hit the mark with sequels. But as far as the movie hitting the mark with sequels, Ace Ventura Two: When Nature Calls is at the top of that list. I reckon it's the best sequel that you could probably ever make. Yeah.
Wait until Jumanji 2, mate.
With
Danny DeVito.
Danny DeVito in it as well. But yeah, I think... and then also, like, he drives down Like a Glove. What a fucking classic.
Like a glove. And I mean, it's quite cultural. Like, a lot of people say it fit like a glove.
Yeah, I mean, I think, all in all, I would say right now, Rotten Tomato 33.
There we are.
Yeah, it's not very highly rated film. But I think it's better than Pet Detective with Courtney Cox.
I'm looking forward to recording it. I've never seen it.
Yeah.
Disagree.
You think Pet Detective is better?
Yeah, I love Pet Detective.
I'll say this now. It's so hard.
Okay. It would have been hard to beat it.
I'll say this now. It's really weird because we're in a weird day and age now in 2019 where, like, you have to watch movies now and be like, oh, that's a little bit transphobic.
Oh, it's very transphobic.
I haven't
seen it for fucking years.
I know, but that's what I think. Like, you watch these movies now that you used to watch back in the day, and you never think about it. And now you watch it, and you're like, I feel like a dickhead. I forgot about that. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I watched Son of the Mask the other day, and that doesn't hold up well.
No.
Fucking hell.
So my thoughts on these Jim Carrey films, right? I love Dumb and Dumber, and I love most of the stuff he's ever done.
Yeah.
Man on the Moon, I think he's absolutely amazing.
I think Man on the Moon is probably the best thing
but
he's
the documentary's
ever
done. Better. But
even more fucking madness. Ace Ventura films and Mask. I hated them.
No. Really?
I hated...
Definitely because they came out when they came out, bro, as well.
I don't like that kind of comedy.
This is my number one. This obviously came out when I was fucking 3.
Yeah.
So I was real young. I probably saw it when I was 10 for the first time ever. But I think it's like hit the time. It's like the era of Jim Carrey. Jim Carrey was playing really well to young audiences. I was the young audience at the time.
Yeah.
You know,
he was
that
the
was me.
Biggest fucking thing in the world,
the biggest,
man.
Yeah,
he was the highest paid actor, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Kind of a liar. He was absolutely
didn't he
banging
himself
it.
A check for $10 million as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, yeah. Really? That's one of his things. Yeah. Like, when he moved to LA, he wrote himself a check for $10 million.
And said,
so
I will cash this
in
5 years. And then he did things like The Mask.
Yeah.
Did Dumb and Dumber, did...
Ace Ventura, the first one, was the highest paid movie at the time.
Yeah.
Ever.
I didn't rate Cable Guy either.
I've never sat through it.
Okay, so here's the thing. I reckon this might be a British
condition.
It's mainly
because it's still in
haste. I don't know if it's... Like, I know a lot of people that love Cable Guy as in America, but basically everyone I've ever met in the UK... I said they don't like Cable Guy.
Well, it got
Matthew
such bad
Broderick.
Reviews.
It
yeah,
did,
a lot of bad reviews
panned.
From my mates as well that I didn't bother watching it because I loved him so much. I was like, oh man.
Did you like Mask and Ace Ventura?
I think I did
because it came out, I was like 14.
Perfect.
So like,
yeah.
For me, and then 16, and I was like smoking weed, so Ace Ventura got funnier.
Yeah.
And Mask blew my mind at that age. Cameron Diaz.
Cameron Diaz's first movie is as The Mask.
Yeah.
Once really?
You saw that,
yeah.
It was hard not to dislike that movie.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. No, again.
But
Cable
also, at your age when it came out, I wouldn't have liked it.
No.
Yeah, I think that's probably the whole thing with the like. I feel like for me, Ace Ventura, the second one, is kind of a cop out. But at the same time, if you tell me, say, a movie I could rewatch over and over again, I still have this on VHS. Mm. And when I went over to my parents' house in Texas, we watched it on VHS, and it still fucking holds up. It's a great movie.
Do Not Pass Go. It is really funny. There was loads of funny shit. I actually
read through all the weird shit, and he tried to make it as friendly as possible for the indigenous people, because they're basically making fun of Nigerian culture, and a lot of Nigerian words are used in it, but they try to be as true to it. They're not poking too much fun to offend people. And apparently, in fact, when the movie first came out, he thought that it was going to flop because it's going to offend a bunch of people. Because at that time, the biggest thing was you couldn't call black people black. That was the thing. So, it's just a different time. Like I said, and then I guess going back to basketball, which would have been a year after, it's classic 90s.
Yeah.
Classic 90s film. I mean, I think the only thing with all these movies, except for maybe Chris's number one, which he'll get to now. I think you have to remember, you have to take it back to, you have to put yourself back in that time. You can't be like, oh, now you look back at the original Pet Detective. It's very transphobic.
Transphobic. I loved it.
But you can't hold that grudge against it, because you remember, 90s.
That was mid-90s. Yeah.
It was a fucking different time than it is now.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're even talking about the movies you watched when you did at that point, right? Yeah. That impact it had.
So I was talking about this the other day. The films that do stuff that's historic, when you look back now, you think, mate, fuck, that's bad.
Yeah.
But at the time, you think it's hilarious.
It was given the green light. Yeah. You've got to remember that.
I can't wait to wear fucking honorable mentions, because it's going to be good.
Right.
Yeah. Well, do you want to do your honorable? I'm going to throw you again. I'm going to throw you.
All right. Can I just do my honorable mentions while Chris is in the bathroom?
Sure.
Number one, honorable mention, Dogma.
Oh, I love Dogma.
What a film.
Yeah.
So didn't make the list. I wanted to add a Kevin Smith, obviously, but I couldn't decide between that one or Clerks, or Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
No way. You've not mentioned my two favourites.
What's the very first one? Is that what your favourite
one? Mallrats, Chase and Amy.
Mallrats, Chase and Amy.
Yeah.
Both classic films.
Maybe Mallrats
But
Dogma.
I think that's a little before my time.
Dogma was the one that blew up. Dogma was the one that probably got the first big cinema release for Kevin Smith in the UK.
I love Dogma. Dogma is one of my favorite. Same thing When Nature Calls. You could just watch that over and over.
Yeah.
Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, before they got too crazy. Before fucking Ben Affleck was Batman. Jesus Christ. Mm. So it was a long time ago. Number two, basically any Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah, cool. World 10 of Mounds.
But the first time I ever seen it, Owen and Luke Wilson in a fucking movie. Ben Stiller has a very delayed role, not very much into it. Sunshine Kingdom?
I haven't seen that.
Moonrise Kingdom, that's what it is.
Moonrise Kingdom.
Great film. Definitely major. What was the last one? The Budapest Hotel?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Classic film. Yeah, I haven't seen Isle of Dogs yet, but I'm sure it's amazing. It's Wes Anderson.
Did you do Little Miss Sunshine as well or not?
Little Miss Sunshine. I think it is Wes Anderson.
I don't know.
It's another one. Number three, this is the one Chris told me that I might have a little backlash on, only because recent news, Pootie Tang.
What the fuck is... I've never even heard of that.
Pootie Tang. Google it right now. POOTYTANG. Pootie Tang is a movie based on an old Chris Rock, when Chris Rock had his own show. Back in the 90s, Louis C.K. wrote and directed a movie about this character that was on his show. And it's actually a really good movie, although Louis C.K. is not a very popular topic
anymore.
I don't know if you saw the other day, but he released this really weird article about how he's claiming to be a robot. It's satire. He's being satirical. He's being I've always been offensive. I've always been this guy who's pushing numbers. And then now you hear stories about me masturbating in front of girls, and you're like, oh, Lucy K's a bad guy. I mean, he's always been that guy. He was always talking about jacking off in front of
girls. The weird thing is, he was always saying it. He's saying, being disgusting with my flat and stuff like that. And then he's like, oh, God.
I feel and I don't feel for the guy.
Yeah.
Because, obviously, I grew up with him. and I grew up with his comedy, and like if you look at his old specials, you could probably still watch it and you'd probably laugh your fucking ass off. And his whole point is that he's trying to bring out that person. He's trying to make jokes for the people that shouldn't be laughing, for the people that actually believe this stuff, which is good and bad. I mean, just a little shout out to myself. I do stand-up comedy, and I kind of get where he's coming from. You kind of want to expose the bad in the world, but be like, I'm above it. But what my fiance tells me all the time is, like, I make jokes, and she's like, that's not funny. And I can kind of, like from seeing it from her perspective, I can see it a little better now. It's like, yeah, you're absolutely right. It may not be funny, but I don't think that you can, like, that's nothing's ever funny. For me, it's either all or everything. Like, either everything's funny or nothing's funny. And I think Louis C.K. is, like, completely to that rule. Like, 100%. But, like I said, Pootie Tang, number three.
Pootie Tang.
Honorable mentions, definitely worth a watch. Basically about a guy who, he doesn't speak any English the entire movie. The main character, Pootie Tang. He doesn't speak
words.
He's just gibberish the entire time. Worth a watch, Louis C.K. Like I said, terrible now, but back in 95, I think, when it came out. Great. And then just for my number four for honorable mentions, it was just Cuba Gooding Jr. And it was Radio and Snow Dogs.
Not seen it.
Yeah, either of those. American classic films. Radio is about this guy who's mentally retarded, and he can't go to football games, but he's like a American football like helper. He's like does all pads and stuff, but he can't go, and so the coaches like help him out. And like it's a whole thing. It's a really, you haven't ever seen Radio. It's a gut wrencher. Yeah, it's gut wrencher.
It's a nice one.
It's kind of like Friday Night Lights or you know any of those things. Okay. Like, it's like a classic American football movie.
Boyish.
Yeah, kind of. 100%.
I was going to say
without the major comedy.
Yeah, without. Yeah, I mean it's Sandler. It's,
yeah. Those are my honorable mentions.
Sure, man.
My number one.
Go for it.
1950s film. Harvey.
Great film.
Fucking love that film.
Yeah, man.
Like, still never seen it.
Yeah.
Unbelievable really film. I remember I think I was about 12, maybe when I watched it, maybe 11. I just thought, fuck me. Like, because it was black and white, it was old, it was not like any films that were on the TV at the time then, because I just saw it on like TCM or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, this film is fucking incredible.
Yeah.
I think I've maybe seen it 50 times since.
Mm-hmm.
I probably watch it once a year, and it's just unbelievable. So it's about a guy who basically develops a friendship with a I think in the original cast, I think it was Nine Foot
Bunny.
Polka, thank you very much. So it's an invisible friend, which is a rabbit, called Harvey. And James Stewart is incredible in it. I mean, the whole acting towards an invisible character, I think, is an asset, which is incredible.
In the 1950s, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, and
they're all doing it now.
Yeah.
I think CGI. The whole thing was, his sister and niece think it's a bit weird that he's not in a relationship. He apparently drinks all the time, although you only see him drink once in the whole film. He's perceived as an alcoholic, which again would bring on these visions of having an imaginary friend. And they try and commit him to a sanatorium, I think that's what they call it there. But a mental institute, basically.
It's basically the precursor of Space Jam.
No, it's not at all.
I mean, there's a lot of similarities to the movie. I mean,
yeah, but you see the lies in Space Jam. And then basically, like, the doctor then becomes... The doctor then doesn't want to commit him because then he actually believes in Harvey. He believes that there is this polka who can see these sort of feelings that you have, and he feels sorry. His sister again feels the same way, and it's kind of like a nice heartwarming ending, even though it's a bit of a saddish movie. And yeah, it's just absolutely incredible. But we were talking.
I mean, I really, really like because. When we looked up the rating on this...
Yeah, it's massive. It's 84%.
84% for 1950s movies is unheard of.
1950s black and white, like, it's fucking...
Is it really? Because I've never really looked at the scores. 84%
Rotten Tomato. I think it's 93% audience as well.
Yeah, so massive. It's one of the few movies, like, you could probably put it in the top 100 of all time.
Oh, I think it is.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
But we were talking about like the whole invisible thing, and we were talking about like, so there's a wrestler called the Invisible Man. So have you ever seen it?
No.
So basically, I think it's in, might be in Japan or Mexico or somewhere, might be even in the US, one of the big wrestling company countries, where they wrestle an invisible person. So they
and
have
they
to
do like
yeah,
the
so
whole
they have
walkage.
A match of going up against this
right,
yeah.
invisible human being. And I'm pretty sure one of the big WWE wrestlers has had a few
I'm
matches
sure
with
happened,
the invisible.
I, can just,
I think
like,
it was
you,
Adam Cole.
When you told the story, I was like, you just picture it. It's like you
yeah.
imagine that
so like
the
taking
music,
a suplex
yeah,
from an invisible human.
Well, you just imagine the whole the entire
it's
act where it's like the like when they're wrestling and then all of a sudden a new person's entering the ring. Everyone
yeah,
stops
the entrance
the music.
Of the invisible
it's
human.
It's the same
yeah.
per thing.
Yeah.
And no one walks down, and then the
you've
other
got to
guy
pretend
just
to get into the ring.
That's
yeah.
gold.
But yeah. yeah, so the whole thing of yeah, just trying to act or do anything with a character who exists in script but not in real life is it's an art.
Yeah,
like that's what it is really. Mm. But I was reading a weird fact of Steven Spielberg. I think it was in 2009 or 2010. Wanted to turn Harvey into a stage musical.
Really?
Yeah. Which is fucking mental.
Yeah.
Mm.
If you try and picture that film as a comedy musical directed by Steven Spielberg.
You'd probably go see it though.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But it never happened.
Yeah. I don't know how much he loved it, but for good reason.
Many, yeah. many, many. They've tried reincarnations of it, so I think there was like four or five different films of it. But the 1950s film was probably the best film of it.
Oh, jeez. Is Donnie Darko a reinversion of Harvey?
No.
I mean, it's kind of close.
I mean, there's
though.
A giant rabbit in it. Who's
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I was throwing it out there. I was hoping they would fucking agree with it.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. I think me and Pip... I think Pip introduced me to that back when we were at uni. And there's a line in it, I think me and Shu were discussing this the other day, about something that, and it's like the whole, really, backbone of, I think, his character in it, is that, you know, my mother once told me, she said Elwood, my mother
she would always
call
me
Elwood. You know, there's two types of people in this world.
In this life, you can be oh so smart or oh so clever.
Yeah.
For years, I was...
Oh so pleasant.
Oh so pleasant. For years, I was smart. I recommend pleasant.
Yeah. And it's such a fucking lovely line, and it influenced me, it made me... Try not to be a smart ass, you know. Like try to like give beat people the perfect listen to
it hasn't stopped happening.
And Stu said to me the other day, the reason why that is, Chris, is you didn't have smart as an option.
Come very I mean, easily.
Yeah. Yeah. Is he wrong?
Yeah, he's not wrong. Yeah. But it's a pleasant person.
But it just kind of makes you think about yeah, it's actually really good. Like you can just try and be a bit of a nicer human. Just treat everyone a bit nicer.
Mm.
Just, you don't have to win everything.
No.
You don't have to win every argument. You don't have to seem right and be the best.
You can back down.
Just be all right with people. Just treat people kindly. And that's what Jimmy does throughout the movie. You know?
Absolutely.
So,
and he's a fucking phenomenal actor anyway.
Yeah, he's awesome.
And that was at his like peak heyday as well.
Mm.
Yeah, respect.
Harvey gets my vote.
Yeah, unfortunately,
I mean,
mate. Even if you'd have picked the first one.
I got one. That's all I'm fucking about.
It was a close one because, you know... The,
I mean, it's
you
amazing
know,
good point.
Seen,
can
seen
get Russell. The honourable mentions?
Yes. So, I'll rattle through these really quickly.
Okay. Yeah, man.
So, Into the Abyss, which is a Werner Herzog documentary.
Oh, my God.
About
yes.
The,
fucking amazing.
So, there was three guys arrested on a murder charge in Texas.
Yeah.
And they are all committed
all
to
boy,
death
Texas.
Row. And they were all, I think, between the ages of 26 and 31. They were quite young. So, basically, Werner Herzog sits down with him a week before they were executed.
Jesus.
And
I mean,
decides
we kill people in Texas.
Decides
it's
to
fine.
Speak to them about the crime, the sentencing, do you feel you were just, and just a general peer into the abyss of a human soul, basically. And then he goes all the way through, I think literally to the day before this guy was executed. And he speaks down, sits down with him for an hour, chats with him, records it, and then he cuts down bits and pieces. And my God, is it emotional! Like it's heart wrenching, because even to the day before they were executed, they were still protesting their innocence.
Mm.
They were still trying to overturn it. They were still trying to get like trials on it. It's fucking incredible.
I'll just say, unfortunately, Texas is not the most forward thinking nation. Or I mean, I say nation because it's basically its own country.
Mm.
Like a lot of my friends have come visit me and. They don't say they're from America. They say from Texas because it's so like cultural. Like people know where Texas is. But this is one little, I guess, fun fact. So they would have been executed through Huntsville in Texas, which I've been to a couple times because I played sports in university and we went through Huntsville because we were on the same like level of school as them, like same size. But Huntsville is the only place where they kill people in Texas, like lethal injection. And unfortunately, there's a burger place in Texas, and they have the Executioner Burger.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Which is a double patty, double cheese monster of a burger. It's probably about, 10 inches high.
Yeah.
And it's half price on execution days.
Yep.
Fucking
Texas
hell.
As I say on the podcast many times, Texas is a weird place.
Texas is a weird place, but that's one of the things is weird. People go to this burger place on execution days because they know you get half price.
For a deal. It's fucking
that's Texas for
a human life for a half price burger.
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, I would say I would hate to talk bad about Farm from.
Did you get fries for that?
Huh? Yeah,
I mean, you got to pay for that. You got to pay full price for that.
That's twice the price.
Yeah. That's why they make where it I'm up. From, but I think Texas is its own little beast.
That's
like
dark shit, man.
It's crazy.
That's Texas.
That's Texas for you. There's a lot of weird dark shit that comes from Texas. It's just what it is.
The second one is another almost documentary. It was The Last Waltz, which is about the band. You know the band?
Yeah.
So it's a Martin Scorsese. I say documentary.
It's definitely a documentary.
So basically, Martin Scorsese got together with a band. It was their last ever concert at the time as the band, which was, they were massive at the time, at E4, I want to say. And they got everyone together. Muddy Waters was there, Joni Mitchell was there, John was there, Emmylou Harris, Bob Dylan, you name it, they were there. Van Morrison was there, doing an incredible version of Caravan. Probably my favourite version, apart from the rainbow. And basically, it's like a 6-hour film. You can find it. And it was filmed on old school film. And when the reels ran out. Basically, they would get a member of the crew to run up, replace the film. And they would just try and capture whatever performances. So a lot of the artists did 3, 4, 5 songs. But in the actual releasing, you only see 1 or 2, maybe. Because one, it would be too long. And two, the film ran out. Yeah. So the only thing they've got are the Steadicams, by the time the Steadicams. Scorsese did it for free. He didn't charge anyone a penny. He dealt with all the bookings. He got all the musicians there. I've got a version in my house, which is unopened. But it's so when Neil Young comes on to do Helpless, basically he opens up with, they don't need any introduction. You know what song I'm going to play, and then start strumming. But underneath his left nostril is a massive rock of cocaine. So backstage, they had the mirror room where they were all, obviously it was the 80s, they were doing whatever. But in the newer versions that are released, they basically photo-edited out
the rock of cocaine.
But I've got the original at home. It's never going to be opened. But it's incredible. Yeah. And they go through their history. Like they started off with Ronnie Hawkins and were called the Hawks. And then Bob Dylan met them and said, you need your own identity, you need your own band name. And then they became the band, at Woodstock. I want to say they'd made like that at Woodstock. And then they ended up supporting Bob Dylan. And then obviously they broke up from there. They got back together, all the downturn from there. The Last Waltz is like the band, my favourite band of all time. Richard Manuel is an unbelievable vocalist. Like, if you ever get a chance to hear his solo stuff, it's heart-wrenchingly good.
Right.
Like his version of Georgia. Oh.
What's his name, Richard?
Richard Manuel.
Richard Manuel.
It's unbelievable. So the story behind him is that the band in the end got back together in the early 90s. And they were doing what they called the Tour of Death. So they basically went from small town to small town. So they went from doing these massive 4,000. They broke up. Robbie Robertson, the lead singer, then got them back together. And they did small little venues. The first venue they ever did was one of the Jack Ruby nightclubs. But they got back together, tiny little 60s, 70s, and they were going one side of America to the other, back to the other side, just to try and make a living again. And then Richard Manuel, one night was just like, it's been 25 years, it's been one hell of a journey. Went back to his room and killed himself, basically. Oh. And then all the band members found him, and then that was when they broke up for the final time.
Wow.
But yeah, he's an unbelievable vocalist. Like he's got an album called Whispering Pines, a live album he did, and fuck me, it tears right through you when you know all the history behind it.
Yeah, yeah.
The fact that Robbie Robertson would cut deals with promoters and record labels to get the best deal for him and not the other band members. So in the last waltz, you could, like, there's a couple of times where Robbie Robertson goes to strum in for a solo, and one of the band members has unplugged his guitar because they fucking hate him. They knew what he's doing. I think it's when they do with Bob Dylan. He goes to sing and nothing.
Yeah.
Like, just dead air.
Yeah.
Because they fucking didn't want anything to do with him.
Yeah, yeah.
But then when he got on the new deal, then he went back on tour, then all the shit went down. And yeah, it's an unbelievable, unbelievable. But it gives you a real good backstory to what it was like being that sort of musician in the 70s and late 60s especially. And it's heartbreaking when you know all the backs. Like, they've got the book is Wheels on Fire, which is unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Nice.
And then onto a lighter side, Paul Blart Mall Cop 2.
Should have been his number one.
Yeah, yeah. I'm surprised that didn't make your top five, Chris.
Almost. With a 5% Rotten Tomato. But I love that film.
I haven't seen it. I've seen the first one. It was alright, but he's a sort of...
Never seen it?
No, he's a physical actor, isn't he? Physical comedy.
Kevin James,
Oh, he's the last actor of his generation.
Like. He is the most underrated actor of all time. I'll defend that forever.
That's literally half a podcast is just Chris talking about
Kevin James. I love Kevin James. But I've got things like, I've got Ray on there. Ray. Ruby Sparks is on there.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Ruby Sparks?
I haven't.
So it's about a writer, Calvin, who becomes a bit of a sort of writer's block, decides to sit down at his laptop or typewriter and type up a story of love and how this girl comes into his life, and it becomes true. And then he writes more, and that becomes true. Basically, everything he writes, this girl does.
Coming true. Yeah.
And then obviously the thing of she starts falling out of love, so he writes that she's in love with him. Then that hits the pan. Then it's just the whole thing from there. It's got Paul Dano and Zoe Kazan in it. Who are always
Paul name?
Yeah, Paul Dano.
Oh, right.
Not Paul Dano, Christ. That'd be an absolute legend. Yeah.
Love a bit of Paul Dano.
Fucking hell.
He did all that, didn't he?
Yeah, but yeah, Paul Dano, who is an incredible actor, and Zoe Kazan, his real life wife. They play, obviously, an excellent on screen couple. Manchester by the Sea is on there. Train to Busan's on there. Man on the Moon.
Man on the Moon, 100% on both of them. It's like.
Yeah,
it's a screen movie.
But yeah, they almost made it. But I had 47.
You had a huge.
It was fucking.
My
stupid.
List came out like nothing. Your list.
That's
always easier. Yeah, it's a great movie. It's always easier to do by genre.
Yeah,
so it simplifies things.
Let's get yours before we finish up. If you've got one film you got to take with you, what's going in the coffin?
The fucking grave.
Into the Abyss.
I don't know. Ghostbusters maybe.
Really?
The original.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Okay. It's got Bill Murray in. And I figured that out when I finished uni. Did all right. Got high. My dad asked me what he
was. Who's the guy in Little House of Horrors?
Rick Moranis.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. I get that. Yeah, yeah. So,
what a classic.
It is, indeed. Yeah, yeah. Well, it's guys.
High Fidelity.
I watched it the other day with Molly. She has never seen it before.
High Fidelity.
I've never seen it.
Probably the first time that Jack Black
storms the fucking stage. Yeah. I've never seen it. I know Black's in it for like his major breakout
role. His first film. Well, his first film
Jack
I saw
Black's
him in.
First film.
No, the first film I ever saw him in was an X-Files
Shallow
episode.
That was genuinely the first Jack Black movie I'd ever seen.
What was that?
Shallow Hell. Oh, God.
I got given it as a Christmas present. Yeah.
Jesus Christ, what a movie. Mm-hmm.
If you like music and you like
High Fidelity.
Yeah, have you seen
cracking.
It?
No.
It's fucking incredible.
My film knowledge is trash.
Yeah. And
apparently, Jack Black's in Waterworld
with the greatest actor of our generation, Kevin Costner.
Yeah,
apparently.
Just quickly, I'm getting a lot of hate this week for my dislike of Patrick Swayze. What are your thoughts on him?
I wouldn't be able to give you enough knowledge to say yes or no.
Swayze train, 100%. Mainly because of Trailer Park Boys, but you know.
So you're saying yes?
Yes.
Okay.
On a Swayze train. That's what I was trying to say.
I wouldn't know enough about Patrick Swayze. I know he's in Ghost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's it.
Classic film. You're just wrong, Stu, mate.
Why? You're a dead guy.
I just don't think he's cool.
Oh,
was I cool. mean, I don't think he's. I don't think he ever was, but he's famous.
I mean, isn't everyone famous nowadays?
All right, well, look. Chaps.
Leave it on that deep note there.
we've all got social media. We're all famous nowadays.
Absolutely. Thanks loads for making the effort to come down.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, for real.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
So
we managed to get... Well, this will probably be a two-parter, I imagine.
Yeah.
How long have we been going?
Two and a half hours.
Oh, right. Jeez. Probably one of the longest ones we've done in a long time.
And a Patreon episode. I'm into it.
I know. So that'll be a two-parter.
Yeah,
plus the Patreon.
Sure.
So
you're hard working for fucking working all day as well.
next week will be Dope Ramblings week.
week.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
And we'll obviously link your stuff in as well, guys, so people can come and listen to your reviews. Well, whilst you're rambling through Quick and the Dead and Critters 3.
Oh, yeah. Great. Just watch the...
They were hard.
Oh, like I said, I think...
So what have we got tomorrow? Tomorrow is Man in the Iron Mask.
Yeah. With the best intro of all time.
Yeah. No, it's not. I was quite ill that week.
Yeah.
So I let out a guttural roar that can only be described as venomous.
Yeah. I left it in.
And it was literally just after I had it all like, and we're in.
Yeah.
And then
I left it in because I figured it might as well stay.
Yeah. But that was a hard watch as well, mind.
Yeah.
Jesus
Christ. Man in the Iron Mask. It's Parent Trap.
It's Malkovich as well.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's just Leo on Leo, actually.
It is double Leo.
Double Leo.
Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah.
Twice the Leo.
Good show. Boys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, guys. Thanks.
There you have it. Dope Ramblings. Chris, Reese, thank you ever so much. Safe journey back to Wales. Obviously, you're probably there already because I'm recording this about a week after. So unless you're dead on the side of a motorway, that's probably a done deal. Thanks for coming on, guys. Thanks for your top fives. What did you guys think? Did you agree? Did you not agree? Let's hear what your top five suggestions are. And we will catch you next week, or indeed on Wednesday if you're a patron, because you should be one of our patrons. Come and give us $10 a month. Show us your support so we can do it full time, for fuck's sake.
It's a drunken soiree in the Within.
Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listing, the podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.